from KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, some fishermen in Cordova may have lost their boats to the unnatural dump of snow there. A new factory longliner will be built in-state, and the dilemma of bycatch. All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The 20 feet of snow that has buried the city of Cordova recently has also caused problems for fishermen there. Rochelle Vandenbroek says the roof of a cannery warehouse storing boats collapsed under the load of snow.
I'm not sure how many boats were crushed when that happened, but I do know that there were boats and equipment affected, and there has been another collapse at a different area of that warehouse. It's my understanding that there are no vessels in that area, but nets and things like that.
She says the boats in the harbor have actually fared better.
We are very, very lucky to have the U.S. Coast Guard on board. They have put 20 crew out shoveling our docks and floats, and we have been putting the word out to all the fishermen to get down there as often as possible and shovel their boats off. So we're very, very lucky that we have not had a big vessel sink other than the small skiff that was shown in the video that I put on YouTube. I'm pretty sure that's the only boat casualty we've had.
She says there might even be an upside to all of the snow this year.
Well, I think it's going to benefit our salmon because the colder the weather, the more omega-3 fatty acids they'll store in their bodies.
Vandenbroek says that amount of snow isn't unusual for the Prince William Sound community. It's just the fact that so much of it fell at one time. It's overwhelmed residents and even caused the evacuation of one apartment building. But through it all, she says residents have kept their spirits up and appreciate the help of the Alaska National Guard, which was called in to help save buildings from collapse. Trial has been set for February 13th for an Oregon man accused of fishing in one area and falsely reporting the fish were caught in another. Freddie Joe Hankins once operated a fishing boat then co-owned by Arnie Fuglevog. Fuglevog, of course, pleaded guilty last year to falsely reporting where he caught sablefish intended for interstate commerce. He was a fisheries aide to Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski and is awaiting sentencing. Hankins was indicted on charges of false statements and false records of fish sold in interstate commerce. Between 2006 and 2007, the indictment alleges he falsely reported the location of harvest for nearly 17,000 pounds of sablefish and over 31,000 pounds of halibut. He has pleaded not guilty.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Ketchikan-based Alaska Ship and Dry Dock has landed a contract with Petersburg-based Alaska Longline Company to construct a new 136-foot factory longliner. As Deanna Garrison reports, this will be the shipyard's first time building a commercial fishing boat.
The Alaska Longline Company operates fishing vessels in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska, harvesting black cod, Pacific cod, and turbot. ASD Director of Shipyard Development Doug Ward says a shipbuilding contract with Alaska Longline Company was signed on Friday.
To build a brand new factory longliner, new fishing vessel that is, I think, partly influenced by recent changes to the American Fisheries Act that is allowing the Bering Sea fishing fleets to modernize and upgrade their fleets that where previously they were unable to add new capacity to those fishing vessels.
Ward would not disclose the price of the contract. The American Fisheries Act was modified in 2010 to allow vessel owners to replace or rebuild their fleets. ASD says rebuilding and replacement of Bering Sea fishing vessels is expected to occur over the next 10 to 20 years, providing hundreds of millions of dollars worth of shipbuilding and conversion work for West Coast shipyards.
The changes to the American Fisheries Act came about through the Coast Guard Reauthorization Act that went through a little over a year ago through Congress. And since then, there's been a lot of speculation on who would build the first vessel and what kind it was going to be. And there's probably four major fleets up in that ground fishing fleet. Looks like the longliners are making the first moves to replace vessels or modernize their vessels. For over a year now, there's even been a number of conferences down in Seattle about what the new regulations mean and and how the industry is going to respond to that. So just at the close of 2011, we're seeing some of the fleets begin to take advantage of the ability to add new ships.
Alaska Ship and Dry Dock began building ships about 12 years ago. Since that time, the shipyard has constructed multiple ferries and an Exxon fuel barge. This will be the shipyard's first contract to construct a commercial fishing vessel. Ward says ASD is actively courting the Bering Sea fleet in hopes of attracting more ship construction and repair work to Ketchikan.
That's a fleet that we've really never had the capacity to build modern steel vessels in the state of Alaska. So those fleets have always turned to yards in the Pacific Northwest. There's some top-notch shipyards that have built the majority of the new vessels for the Bering Sea fishing fleet. They're good yards. They're extremely competitive. And to be able to compete in that market and actually land one of the projects early in this fleet rebuild program that's going on is a great opportunity for Alaska Ship and Dry Dock and for Ketchikan, too.
In a joint press release with ASD, Alaska Longline Company President and Managing Owner John Winther said he is pleased that ASD got the contract to build the new vessel. He says he's watched ASD develop into a first-class company with the skills necessary to perform vessel repair and construction of the highest quality. The new longliner is scheduled to be completed next year. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
One of the most important issues facing many fisheries is how to avoid the bycatch of unwanted species. KDLG's Mike Mason has more.
Commercial fishermen across the globe spend a great deal of time and energy trying to catch the species of fish they're targeting. In addition, fishermen also try to figure out how not to catch other species that they can't sell or are prohibited from keeping. The details surrounding the economics of bycatch were addressed by marine resource economist Gil Sylvia. He's the superintendent of the Coastal Oregon Marine Experimental Station, which is part of the Hatfield Marine Science Center at Oregon State University. He says many fishermen have always tried to fish more efficiently.
We start with open access, right? Most fisheries until 50 years ago were open access. Very few rules and regulations. Fishermen went out to fish. They had the whole ocean to fish. They weren't told where to go, what gear to use. It was their decision. I should note, though, that fishermen were still dealing with lots of bycatch and discard issues under open access. And I'll give you an example. So the pink shrimp fishery off the West Coast harvest pinkfish and trawl gear, they have had a huge bycatch issue. Now, it's not with rockfish species, which are now a choke species for them. It was Pacific whiting, because Pacific whiting would clog the net and induce very high sorting costs. So these fishermen designed excluder devices. So we had 50 years ago excluder devices in trawl nets off the West Coast. So my point is that fishermen have been grappling with this issue for a long time. And it's not just the result of regulations.
He says preventing bycatch was even a major goal of the Magnuson-Stevens Act, which is the governing legislation for federal fisheries. However, he claims changes need to be embraced by fishermen, lawmakers, and other stakeholders.
The solution really is to co-develop rights-based systems, which is where we're heading on the West Coast, and performance standards, particularly market-based performance standards, that create the long-term rewards for industry to discover, and this is the issue of incentives. It's not just about the incentive at the moment, but it can be a 10-year investment. So who's going to discover and create and implement the bycatch and discard solutions that are going to lower costs and increase profits for industry and reward the best fishermen?
Another of the panelists who addressed the bycatch issue was John Groover with United Catcher Boats. He's the inter-co-op manager for the organization that was created in the early 90s to represent the owners of vessels that trawl for groundfish in the Bering Sea, the Gulf of Alaska, and off the west coast of the United States. He specifically addressed the much-talked-about Inshore Salmon Savings Incentive Plan put in place on vessels that target pollock in the Bering Sea. The pollock fishery was rationalized over a two-year period in 1999 and 2000. Groover says many of the incentives to reduce the bycatch of king salmon came about through Amendment 91, which was the hard cap on Chinook bycatch mandated by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. The actual hard cap was 60,000 kings if the co-ops formed what were called IPAs, or incentive plan agreements. If not, the hard cap was $47,500. Gruver says all of the various co-ops took advantage of the opportunity to create IPAs.
They had to provide incentives, you know, all the way down to the individual vessel level, so that we just didn't look at what the co-op did as a whole. It had to be what vessels were accomplished. And so the idea of the IPA, though, was to be different from a regular hard cap in that how do you get people to avoid Chinook salmon at all levels of abundance? So if you're a traditional hard cap program, if you're nowhere near the cap, people aren't too worried. But the idea here was, you know, whatever fishing conditions, especially in the case of Chinook salmon, which had high variability from one year to the next, how do you get people to do the best they can every year?
The incentives included in the various IPAs included both rewards and penalties. Gruver noted that one of the successful IPAs covered the inshore sector targeting pollock.
Vessels can fish up to their share of the 47,000, but in order to get to their share of the 60,000, they had to earn salmon savings credits. And that became the main incentive then in the SIP program. And you earn those credits by, you know, how to get across this gap from the base cap to the hard cap in years that you needed the full amount. How you earn those credits was for every three fish below the base cap that a vessel avoided in a year, it would earn a savings credit. And those savings credits would be saved in a savings credit account and would last over a five-year period. So when the when a vessel would reach its performance standard or its base cap, share of the performance standard, the base cap, it could move on towards the hard cap if it had in its account some savings credits.
The inshore pollock sector covers 98 vessels, all within six different cooperatives. Gruver says that means that reporting and data management had to be handled in a quick and effective manner. As a result, a special website was created.
We have a secure website that people, each co-op can go to, and they can track and make transfers on there. They can see how all their vessels stand, and each co-op can check on another cooperative. But more importantly, and check on themselves, but we can, as managers, Carl and myself, can go and make sure that each of the cooperatives then is understands with clarity of the rules of this complex program.
A look at the latest data from the National Marine Fisheries Service shows that the Chinook salmon bycatch in the pollock fisheries in the Bering Sea this year was 25,400 fish, which is well below the over 121,000 kings caught as bycatch back in 2007. It's unknown at this time if the efforts to reduce Chinook bycatch in the Bering Sea will have a positive impact on rebuilding the king salmon runs in southwest and western Alaska, which have come in at disappointing numbers in the past few years. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Here's a heads up for our friends in Petersburg or anyone headed that way to fish this year. The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association will offer a 10-hour fishing vessel safety and drill conductor course there on February 4th. It'll be held at the Icicle Seafoods Cookhouse Cafeteria. The course meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirements for commercial fishing vessels. It's available free to commercial fishermen. Participants will have hands-on practice with emergency equipment both in the water and on board, including PFDs, life rafts, immersion suits, EPIRBs, and fire extinguishers. If not enough people sign up, the class may be canceled, so pre-registration is required. The AMSI office in Sitka has more information.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders, and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And by
ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KRBD's Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan and KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.